Hello, this is Terry Burdick, reading to you from the Commercial News, the weekend edition, for Saturday, December 5th, I'm sorry, 6th, and Sunday, December 7th. As always, we will start on our front page today looking at our local news. We'll travel then to statewide news. Something in the features page that might catch our eye. We'll take a look at what's going on nationally in our local sports, and we'll take a break somewhere around the mid-time of our time together and take a listen to the obituaries as were received by Friday at 5 p.m. So let's take a look starting on with this headline from our front page, A Gift for Every Child, Toys for Tots Annual Drive Wrapping Up in 10 Days by Christy Jankowski. Toys for Tots helps to make sure no child goes without a present this holiday season. In 2024, the Danville Toys for Tots program supported 3,245 children and distributed 12,791 toys. Gabby Ingold, the coordinator of Vermilion County of Illinois, along with Fountain County of Indiana, has been involved with the organization for the past 6 years and just became the coordinator this year. Ingold took over for her sister-in-law, Megan Montgomery. It was kind of a family affair, Ingold says, of why she became involved. My husband's sister was the coordinator for the last 6 years, and she passed away in February, so I just wanted to kind of keep that tradition going in a family. The first day that I helped, it was amazing to see the sheer amount of gratitude the parents had when they came to pick out toys, Ingold said. It's just keeping that Christmas spirit alive and kind of relieving some of the burden that they face. You know, when you have to decide, do I buy a Christmas present or do I pay the light bill? Just to see the gratitude and these people's faces was so wonderful. Ingold said she has about 3,000 children on her list between both counties, Vermilion and Fountain. And I apologize, I'm not from Indiana, so if it's Fountain, you hear it the way that it's correct. The need we have is between 4 and 10 currently for boys and girls, and those are easy gifts and an easy group age group to buy for as well, between 4 and 10. So we're grateful for everything we get. Ingold added that she'll come to you as well if you have a gift to give. I don't care how small or how big, we will come and pick it up. If you cannot make it to us, we will make it to you, she said. And they are having a big event to fill the truck up with toys on Saturday at Ollie's in Danville. I'm hoping that we can fill that truck up to the gills, Ingold said. The event will go on from 10 in the morning until 6 that night. Also, Ingold is hoping to add reading material to each gift. We're in desperate need of books, too, she said. I'd like for every child to receive a book, but I only have about 1,000 books right now. Ingold also said the community deserves credit. Shout out to the Danville community as well, she said. We've had people reach out to me asking for a box that I didn't even think would want one. The community has really been coming through for me. State Representative Brandon Switzer of Danville is also hosting a drive at his office collecting toys until Tuesday, December 9th. The Toys for Tots organization does a tremendous job of spreading Christmas cheer year in and year out, and I'm happy to support their mission, said Representative Switzer in a news release on his website. This holiday season, I encourage everyone who's able to give to this great organization to support local children. All of the toys at Schweizer's office will be given to children in Danville. His Danville office is located at 3821 North Vermilion Street, Suite 5. You can also visit danvilleill.toysfortots.org for more information. Gifters have until December 16th to donate an unwrapped, newly bought gift in one of the Toys for Tots boxes around Vermilion and Fountain Counties. Monetary donations are also accepted. Continuing with our Christmas and holiday theme decorations spread cheer, again by Christy Jankowski. This is Dateline Georgetown. Bringing the community together for holiday cheer with theme decorations, the Village of Georgetown is inviting residents and businesses to celebrate the holidays by adding an inflatable Santa to their yard for the great inflatable Christmas trail. Residents are encouraged to place a 12-foot or taller inflatable Santa in their yard to celebrate the spirit of the community. It's a lighthearted, joyful way to bring people together and show off our town's Christmas spirit, said Tammy Hodge of the Georgetown Ladies Community Club, which is helping organize the local list. A retired couple, David and Carol Nycomb of Georgetown, have decked out their yard with an inflatable Santa, a nativity set, as well as light shows tuned to radio stations 88.1 and 92.1 at 405 Garfield Street. We have a big manger for a nativity static display and everything that goes with that, David Nycomb said. And on the other side of the driveway, we have deer. We have a Christmas tree that's digital. The lights work with the music. Then we got a metric sign that has the words to the song and tell them what radio stations to tune to hear the music. It's evolved a lot over the years, Nika added, about the displays that they've been putting up for the past 24 years, and he has been retired since 2013. As for why the Nikums began decorating their yard, David said, I can't remember. We just like Christmas and everything. As for what David loves about Christmas, he said, the birth of Jesus, number one, and everything else to do with Christmas, the packages, the trees, the people, and the Christmas music. David's wife, Carol, loves getting into the holiday spirit and has even passed down the love to her children, grandchildren, and one great-grandchild who is almost two. We used to have a train that I really liked, but we have given it to our daughter. Her daughter has a train up in her yard down the street. She's not quite two, and she likes the lights. She likes to stand at the front door and watch it, she said about her grandkids enjoying the displays. They do. They'll all enjoy it. Carol said the credit for the village getting more involved goes to the president of the Georgetown Ladies Club, Tammy Hodge. I'm very excited that our community finally has a different spirit this year, Carol added, and it's mostly because of Tammy Hodge organizing everything. We, Village of Georgetown, are doing new things that we've never done before. Many events are happening in Vermilion County and in Georgetown this weekend. Hodge has helped plan quite a few, including the Mrs. Claus workshop, which matches families in need of Christmas presents with adopters in the community. Hodge said at this time they have 117 kids to serve in the Georgetown Ridge Farm School District. There's also a holiday parade, which is happening on Sunday evening with events from 2 to 5 preceding the parade. We do a lot of things throughout the year, Hodge said. We do all kinds of stuff, but right now we're just inundated with holiday stuff. You can contact Emily Hart at 217-655-8917 or Tammy Hodge at 217-822-2622 if you want to be involved. Your address will be added to the local list on a Google form for people to find Santa throughout the Georgetown area or throughout Georgetown. Our goal is to get, you know, some more people on being on the wagon with it and to do like a scavenger hunt with it. Just do something fun for families to interact with, Hodge added. She said the idea of inspiration came from the Village of Atwood. You can never have too many Santas. Let's fill Georgetown with holiday cheer and make everyone's drive through town a little more magical this Christmas, she added. Let's make this Christmas season extra magical by putting Georgetown on the map, one giant Santa at a time. Many other local communities are also in on spreading joy with other holiday inflatable themes. For instance, Catlin is doing polar bears instead of Santas, and you can find the inflatable theme for your town or village on the Great Inflatable Christmas Trail Facebook page. The Great Inflatable Christmas Trail began on November 28th and runs through New Year's Eve. Fun! Our final story on the front page today comes with this headline, Danville Receives Additional Grant Funds. Dateline Danville. Good news for some homeowners in Danville. During Tuesday's City Council meeting, aldermen were notified by Logan Clark, the Community Development Administrator, that an additional $483,000 in grant money has been made available for their home rehabilitation programs. Logan, with that money, that means at least another 10 or so houses will be able to help folks rehabilitate, correct? Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. asked Kronk. The city has allocated almost $2.6 million in the last 3 years in the Illinois Housing Development Authority for rehabilitation and demolitions. We have three active rehab programs right now, Kronk told the council. This one is a maximum of $60,000 for a whole home rehabilitation. The city has the IHDA Home Repair and Accessibility Program, the Community Development Block Grant, and the IDHA Homeowner Assistance Fund, which offered help for COVID hardships. All three programs help those in low to moderate income, depending. To read more about the programs, visit the city website at thecityofdanville.org under the Grants Management tab. Kronk added that the homeowners who will be receiving grant funds are already on their list. The waiting list will stay the same, Kronk said. It will not be a new application process. It's the original waiting list we did last year. We did a year and a half ago. Alderman Tricia Teague asked Kronk, have those homeowners already been notified? Kronk said on Tuesday they hadn't contacted anyone on the list. We received this about 48 hours ago, he told Teague on Tuesday, and this will be coming back to the City Council for contractual amendments. In news from Westville, Santa's Anonymous is underway in Westville. The 49th consecutive year of the Westville's Santa's Anonymous is underway, and Santa's elves are in need of the community's help. Santa's Anonymous accepts new toys, wrapping paper, tape, and cash donations. It will not be accepting clothes or stuffed animals. The 2025 barrel locations in Westville are at Westville High School, the Judith Giacoma Elementary, Westville American Legion, Subway, Dollar General, CVS, City Hall, Landmark Credit Union, Coal Miners, Lori's Sportsman Inn, and Robinson Chiropractic. All barrels will be picked up on December 17th. So for those of you planning to make a donation in Westville, you've still got time. There's lots of places to donate. Let's turn our attention to what's going on in the state of Illinois. In today's paper, Illinois educators hope to tackle math competence. And this comes to us from Peter Hancock at the Capital News Illinois. Each year, the Illinois State Board of Education releases an annual report card with data showing how students are doing in the basic subjects of reading, writing, and math. And each year, when those numbers come out, reporters, teachers, parents, and school officials sift through the data looking for evidence to show whether scores are improving, holding steady, or getting worse. But one trend has been so consistent over the years it rarely draws much public attention. Overall, students score lower in math than they do in English language arts. That was true in the 2025 report card, which showed only 38.4% of Illinois students overall scored proficient or better in math, compared to 52% in English language arts. Illinois students are not unique in that regard. Nationwide, according to the National Assessment of Educational Progress, also known as the Nation's Report Card, 59% of 8th graders in 2024 scored at or above the basic level in math, the achievement level most closely aligned with grade level expectations, compared to 66% who did so in reading. Even on the international stage, American students do not perform as well as in math as their counterparts in many other industrialized democracies. Scores from the 2023 Trends in International Mathematics and Science Study, or TIMSS exam, a project of the U.S. Department of Education's National Center for Education Statistics, showed 8th grade students in the U.S. on average scored below their peers in countries like Singapore, Japan, Sweden, and Australia. In Illinois, officials at the State Board of Education hope to close the gap through the development of a statewide comprehensive numeracy plan. The document will direct not just the way math is taught in the classroom, but how math teachers are trained in the profession and math programs are administered in school districts. Culture or teaching? Latrenda Knighton, a retired math teacher who's now president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics, says the difficulty many Americans have with math is now so common, it's become socially acceptable for people to openly admit they're just not a math person. It's like a badge of honor to some people, she said in an interview with Capital News Illinois. And what you say publicly aloud has a huge impact on impressionable young minds and their outlook on a subject or content area or their beliefs about themselves. And we have to change that. We can no longer accept that it's okay to say, oh, I'm just not good at math, and so it's okay if I don't understand this. You should say, why is it that I can't make sense of this? But Beth McDonald, an education professor at Illinois State University who trains prospective teachers to teach math in early elementary grades, says she believes the problem is of lagging math skills in America is not just a cultural issue. It's more about how we teach mathematics, she said in a separate interview. McDonald traces much of the problem with today's math education techniques to the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001. That's the signature education policy law of the George W. Bush administration that mandated standardized testing in public schools nationwide and tied federal funding to those test results. Well, that article is over and it ended very abruptly. I'm sorry I didn't give you more warning for that. But it looks like we are much better in reading than we are in math, and boy, we need to change that for our students. That was the gist of the article. Looking to what's going on in Indiana, the Indiana House approves midterm redistricting bill. This comes to us from Tom Davies and Leslie Bonilla Munez from the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Indiana House Republicans voted Friday to go along with President Donald Trump's demand for redrawing the state's congressional maps. The House action sends the congressional redistricting issue to the state Senate, where its future is in real doubt. The Senate's Republican leader has said for months that too few senators are in support for it to pass. House members voted 57 to 41 in favor of the new maps crafted to produce a 9-0 Republican delegation by carving up the districts currently held by Democratic Representatives Andre Carson in Indianapolis and Frank Mervin in the area along Lake Michigan near Chicago. 12 Republicans joined all Democrats present in opposing the bill. Friday's House debate occurred when a couple hundred people attended a pro-redistricting rally inside the State House, where a Turning Point Action leader vowed major spending by the group to defeat Republican senators who vote against new maps. At least 14 of the 40 Republican senators have publicly indicated opposition to redistricting, according to the Indiana Capitol Chronicle's tracking. Combined with the 10 Democratic senators, the total is just short of a majority in the 50-member Senate. About 10 GOP senators have not made their position known. Governor Mike Braun maintained Friday he believed the Senate would approve the new maps, with opponents being out of sync with most Republicans and conservatives in the state. Braun stood by threats that he and Trump have made to support Republican primary challengers against recalcitrant senators and to keep up the pressure campaign if the Senate were to reject the new maps next week. Hopefully we won't have to drag them through this more than what we've done so far, Braun told reporters, but it's not over if they don't do it. David McIntosh, president of the Washington-based Club for Growth and a former Indiana congresswoman, posted what he called a final warning on social media to Republican Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray. Pass the new congressional map supported by President Trump and Hoosiers, the Post said. Failure to get this done means you and any other opposition will be defeated and removed from office in your next election. Let's get it done. The Senate is set to begin consideration of the redistricting plan on Monday, when the Senate Elections Committee will hold a public hearing lasting a maximum of 4 hours, according to Bray's office. A spokesman for Bray did not respond Friday to a request for comments from him about the House-approved maps. Bray had previously said he did not feel that redrawing our congressional districts mid-cycle is the best way to achieve the goal of maintaining a Republican majority in the U.S. House. The Senate is expected to take a final vote Thursday on the redistricting plan. Well, let's draw our attention now to the death notices and obituaries that were provided by Friday at 5 p.m. We have two today. Dolores D. Toole. Dolores D. Toole, 84, of Danville, Illinois, passed away on December 2, 2025. She achieved a goal of seeing all of Shakespeare's plays performed live. I loved that in her obituary. A massive Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, December 10th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Westville. That's at 231 North State Street. Father Timothy Sapé will officiate. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. A rosary service will be held at 4:30 p.m. on Tuesday, December 9th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. That's at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Please join Dolores' family in sharing memories, photos, and videos of her life through her tribute wall at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. Mary Ann Christie. Mary Ann Christie, 84, of Danville, passed away at 1:39 a.m. on Sunday, November 24th. A memorial service to celebrate the life of Mary Ann Christie will be held at a later date. Cremation arrangements have been entrusted to Sunset Funeral Home. Memorials in her name may be made to the Vermilion County Animal Shelter. Please join Mary Ann's family in sharing memories, photos, and videos of her life through her tribute wall at www.sunsetfuneralhome.com. And that concludes the reading of today's obituaries. I'm sorry I did miss one. We do have a final death notice. Jamie Lee Rader. Jamie Lee Rader, 50, of Springfield, Missouri, formerly of Danville, died on November 25th. Funeral services will be held at 2:30 p.m. Thursday, December 11th in Campbell Lewis Funeral Home in Marshall. Her burial will follow in Ridge Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 1:30 to 2:30 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home, and memorials are suggested to Saline Animal League. A full obituary and online guest book are available at www.campbell-lewis.com. Well, let's turn our attention to what's going on in the editorials today. And of course, we found something that's holiday themed, as we are in December, but the primary editorial today reminds us to shop local this year. A strong, vibrant local economy contributes to a community's quality of life in many ways. One of the biggest keys to building that strong community is through area residents spending money in local stores. It can be as easy to shop online, but that money does little to help a community grow. Once those dollars leave, they rarely return in any significant way. Money spent in local stores, especially locally owned shops, ripples through a community in ways most of us don't realize. Obviously, buying local helps create local jobs. One of the biggest benefits of shopping at a local store is the face-to-face service customers can receive. Working with a store employee who lives in the community can be so much easier and far less frustrating than dealing with a faceless customer service representative on the phone or computer. And it is better by far than trying to wade through the artificial intelligence assistants so many companies now use. Those local employees in turn also spend their money in nearby stores, supporting other jobs and contributing to local tax revenues. When a community's businesses are strong, their taxes help ease the local fiscal burden on residents. Strong local businesses also contribute to a community's special events, such as festivals. They support local arts groups, not just in dollars, but in attracting audiences through partnerships with these art groups. They sponsor youth sports teams for boys and girls. They fund scholarships and help local schools. And they play a significant part in supporting local charities such as the United Way and special projects such as the renovation of the Fisher Theater. According to the Independent Business Alliance, for every $100 spent in local stores, almost $53 circulates back within the community. That compares to every $100 spent in chain stores, where only $13 or so stays local. Strong local businesses also help maintain a community's physical appearance. Danville officials already have had to spend millions of dollars to demolish buildings that once housed businesses. A quick count on the empty lots through the downtown area shows how important that factor is to the community's health. Once those buildings are gone, it's difficult to find anyone interested in developing those sites. We all can play a role in helping the local economy stay strong, especially during the holiday season. This is the time of year many local businesses count on area shoppers to help them remain viable. Think about that before making an online purchase and consider visiting a local store when taking care of your Christmas list. You're likely to find good deals, unique products, and excellent customer service while contributing to the community's economic health. Well, here's someone we haven't heard from in a little bit. We have a column today by Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker, titled, "Winter's Cold and Snow Are a Welcome Sight." Please don't notify the mental health authorities, but I love the approach of winter. The first real snow this season arrived the other day, covering everything in 6 or 7 inches of snow, white, downy flakes. To me, it was magical. The dirty, ragged, fallen leaves quickly vanished. The world outside was transformed by a sudden silence, a crisp cleanliness, and cold air that seemed to invigorate every breath. I'm sure that Florida, Arizona, and Texas are great in December, dry and hot and leafy, with grass to mow and nothing to shovel, but I know I would miss winter in the Midwest. Despite the occasional weather-related hassle, it brings out the best in people. Shakespeare once said that one touch of nature makes the whole world kin. Like most people, if someone's car is stuck, I stop and push. If someone's stranger's truck won't start, I'll reach for my jumper cable. And I'm grateful when such fellow feeling is returned. For instance, last week, Lori and I were surprised and delighted to see that our sidewalks and the walk from the house to the street were completely cleared by the sweet young couple next door. They didn't need to do it. I'm perfectly able to shovel snow myself. They just did it. It often has been noted that the English are home folk, largely because of their weather, which is often cold and wet, while Italians and Spaniards are outside, sitting in the sun-drenched local square or sipping coffee in the open air. The English are hunkered down beside the hearth, feeding the fire, reading books, sipping tea, knitting, sewing, enjoying music, playing cards. That's kind of how I feel at this time of the year. It's so nice to pull that good old woolen sweaters from the cedar chest and just enjoy the warmth, comfort, and coziness of home. Our house is 150 years old and filled with things long loved and uniquely ours. I wouldn't trade it for a castle. But there's more to winter than staying indoors, of course. To me, nothing's more beautiful than a perfect winter day. Cold, but not bitterly cold. Clear blue sky, sun shining, fresh snow so clean and white. To me, that's the time to dig out the boots, hat, and scarf and head for the woods and soak it all in. 3 blocks from our house is a park that's perfect for such walks. It was donated many years ago by a family that loved the big old hardwood trees in there. The acreage came with one proviso, that the trees would remain, and they have. There's a trail that passes through the woods, creating a half-mile loop. On a nice winter day, I like to go there and do four loops, 2 miles. It's slightly hilly, so that's enough to stretch the legs and get the blood flowing. Although I'm out for less than an hour, it's a chance to enjoy the towering trees, the ever-busy squirrels, and an occasional rabbit or hawk. 50 yards away is a steep hill, which after a good snow is filled with happy kids and their sleds. Winter also brings special foods. Every year, using Thanksgiving leftovers, we make a big pot of turkey and noodles. It's so good, I like it almost as much as the holiday dinner itself. Then there are the cookies, pies, candy, hot chocolate, raisin bread, and other good, rich, warm things you don't want in August. I could go on, but I have to run. There's a 700-page book, a steaming pot of tea, and a nice leather chair waiting for me. Let it snow. If you want to get in touch with Kevin Cullen, you can always email him at theirishhiker@aol.com. Well, as I am reading to you this afternoon or preparing this show, it's approaching the time of the Bears and Packers game. So let's take a look at what the headlines say that this game is going to look like today. Bears try to protect the North against Packers. And this comes to us from the Associated Press. The NFC North leaders are eager to show that they're not the same old Chicago Bears who continually took their lumps against the Green Bay Packers over the last 15 years or so. Chicago snapped an 11-game skid in this rivalry when it ended the 2024 regular season by winning at Green Bay. The Bears, 9-3, have built on that momentum this year as they have the NFC's best record and carry a 5-game winning streak into their Sunday matchup with the Packers, 8-3-1, at Lambeau Field. I think throughout this whole year that we've been able to accomplish has given us extreme confidence, Bears quarterback Caleb Williams said. And then for myself, being a part of something that everybody knows the stats of the Bears going up there before last year, it wasn't the best. And so being able to be a part of that win, being able to contribute to that, provides confidence for myself, and I'm going to exude that to the other guys. Chicago hasn't had a winning season since 2018, but the Bears' emergence doesn't surprise Packers safety Xavier McKinney. McKinney was impressed with the creativity new Bears coach Ben Johnson showed at Detroit's offensive coordinator when the Lions swept the Packers last year. I knew they were going to be good, McKinney said. Especially whenever they ended up getting Ben Johnson. I was, okay, this is going to be a problem. They're going to be a problem this year. The Packers also are feeling good about themselves. They've won 3 straight and are eager to regain control of this rivalry. These two teams will face each other twice in a span of 14 days in a pair of games that will go a long way toward determining the NFC North champion. They meet again December 20th at Chicago. I feel like our team knows that we control our destiny at this point, Packers safety Evan Williams said. There's a lot that's to be said about the Bears and how they're doing right now. They've put together a hell of a season. But at the end of the day, I feel like we all understand if we go out there, put our best foot forward, and play our best ball, then we won't feel that there's a team out there that we can't hang with. Well, we're going to have to see. Well, as we begin to wrap up our time together, we are in just a whole slew of high school and prep sports, from boys basketball, prep girls basketball, boys swimming, prep wrestling, men's college basketball, women's college basketball. There's quite a lot of women's volleyball that is wrapping up at the college level right now. Let's take a look at what's going on Monday locally. Well, Monday at 5:30 or at 6 o'clock, if you're there at 5:30, you'll be on time. You can catch a prep boys basketball game at Georgetown Ridge Farm at Milford, Hoopston area at Salt Fork, Oakwood at Paxton, Blucky, Leota, Schlarman Academy at Heritage, and Armstrong Potomac at Arthur Christian. In prep swimming, we've got Covington and South Newton at Attica at 5 p.m. In prep girls wrestling, Covington and Fountain Central at South Vermilion Invitational at 5 p.m. And in local prep wrestling, Bismarck, Kenny, Rossville, Alvin, Armstrong, Potomac will be at Danville at 6 p.m. And what's the weather going to be like this week? Well, it's winter, so it's going to be cold. Monday's high is 25, Tuesday and Wednesday will be back in the mid-30s, cold high again, super cold on Thursday at 28, 21 degrees on Friday is our high, Overnight lows look like they will be in the single digits up to the low double digits for the week. We've got some snow flurries on Sunday coming in, which you already know about, and no more snow noted until Friday, where you can have snow and ice. Oh, I hate saying that word out loud. 1 to 2 inches are expected. Looks like just chilly and cold for most of the week. Everybody hang in there. Stay safe, stay dry, stay warm, and I'll be talking and reading again with you soon. Bye-bye.